Hey guys, this is the Vertical Guidance Podcast.
I'm Wyatt Fink.
And I'm Alex Danger.
And we're interviewing pilots from around the industry about their flight training experiences. And our goal is to make getting into the aviation industry easier by offering advice to people that are right on the edge of beginning their aviation journey.
So let's get into it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Today on the Vertical Guidance Podcast, we have Tyler Berry. Welcome on, Tyler.
Hey, how's it going? How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
In the dream.
Great.
So what are your different credentials, Tyler?
So I'm a uni grad. I currently work in an airline, regional airline based mainly on the East Coast. I fly the CRJ 700 and 900. I'm based out of next month will be in New York. I was a former lead flight instructor for University of North Dakota, as well as a SOFT, stage check pilot, did a bunch of things for UND with MEI as well. And then I was super involved on the student organization side with Student Aviation Advisory Council, SAMA, Student Aviation Management Association, and then Alpha Eta Rho as well. So I did a lot of different things at UND and just been started at my current company kind of post-COVID back in May of this year.
Nice. Seems like you've been staying pretty busy when you're at UND. So what got you into aviation, Tyler?
Yeah, so I always kind of tell people it was my grandfather. My grandfather was a B-29 flight engineer back in World War II, and he worked for American for about 40 years. And he passed away when I was really young, so I didn't really know him, but I kind of use him as kind of the reason why I got involved in aviation. I got started in the EA Young Eagles program back in 2013. That's when I took my first kind of flight in a small general aviation airplane, and I kind of kept up from that.
So Young Eagles, what exactly is that program?
So it's a program that's basically, it's a bunch of volunteer pilots that take kids. I forgot the age range. I think it's like 6 to 15 or 14 that they can go up and basically just experience like a discovery flight for free.
Okay. So what kind of fed your motivation as a student to get done and roll into the airlines at such a young age?
Yep. So, like I said, I started back in basically May of this year with my company. We took about a year off with the COVID kind of shutdown. So a little bit of a step back, but honestly, I was able to kind of do some more stuff at UND. I instructed a little bit longer, which I think was a great experience. So I kind of looked at it as kind of an opportunity. I was able to kind of grow my skill set a little bit with that time off. But yeah. Really, the motivation, I think, was I don't know, I enjoyed my time at UND, experienced a lot of great stuff there, but I just was excited to go out and kind of get involved in the industry. And I mean, it's really cool to go fly a jet. I mean, that's ultimately, I mean, I think that's why a lot of us are doing this, but that was kind of my motivation, was kind of keep moving along and kind of how far can I go, I guess.
What's your end game?
Yeah, end game, I would say, is like, you know, any of the major airline. You know, U.S. carriers is kind of my goal. I would love to hopefully, you know, of course, get in the left seat of a, you know, mainline aircraft. But I would love to also get involved kind of on a more of a management side of things. You know, I don't know what that quite looks like in the future. But I would also too like to kind of get another personal like side gig going. I don't know what that's going to look like, but we'll give it a little bit of time. I'm working on my master's right now. With a business focus, so that's kind of something I'd like to complete and then kind of go from there.
So, what are you doing that master's through? I'm curious because I just applied to the UND master's one.
Yeah, I'm actually doing it through Colorado State Global. So,
he's a smart man. Works really
well with my crazy schedule.
So, you said you wanted to get into like the management side of the airlines. How do you like roll into that?
You know, there's a lot of pilot management positions. You know, each base typically has like a management, you know, assistant chief pilot or chief pilot. And there's also people that work, you know, at headquarters that do pilot, you know, management as well. And of course, like director of flight operations or even like a duty pilot. A lot of airlines have duty pilots that are like, think of it as like the SOF, basically. So if they ever have like pilot has an issue, they can call in and so you lose your passport or something and they can help you with that.
So is it like HR kind of thing, like what the duty pilot, so that management side, how would you help them like find their passport, like what exactly do they do?
So like, at least at my company, I'll use a better example. So let's say like you lose your ATP, like your certificate, not like lose it, like FAA takes it, but like you just physically lose the certificate, like it falls out of your wallet. They can help like print it out and get like a temporary authorization from the FAA to like keep you moving. So just kind of help out a little bit. But they're kind of in our, at least in my company, they're in our OCC or operations control center, to where they can call in. And like, I had to call them a couple nights ago just for a question. So kind of think of it like the manager on duty or the SOF that we had at UND. So those are all several different positions that you can do. But I mean, hopefully someday, long time down the road, but it'd be one of my goals is one of those positions.
So with the scheduling with that, because I know you're already pretty busy with your schedule now, how would you like wiggle that into your schedule? Like, are you on call when you're off like a trip or something like that for that job?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure, like 150% on how it works. So we'll see. Like I said, that's kind of something I'm looking down here down the road at. So kind of just trying to focus on flying the line right now and kind of wrapping up the rest of the training footprint that I'm flying right now with my current company.
So what kind of like day-to-day operation do you have on the line right now with the current airline you're at?
Yeah. So right now I'm about to transfer bases to New York. I'm currently based in Cincinnati. And right now, I mean, a lot of us are sitting on reserve, and then we're going to go become line holders, meaning that we have defined trips. Right now I'm on a type of reserve called long call. So I'm on about a 12-hour call out. They give me a heads up on, hey, Tyler, you have to go fly this trip. It could be like a day trip. It could be a 3 or 4 day trip like I'm on right now. So like the other day we had to do a ferry flight, empty 700, CRJ 700 from Cincinnati to Minneapolis. And then we picked up another, we went to Des Moines and back with actual passengers on the back. So that was something they kind of called me at right at that 12-hour point. There's different types of reserve as well. There's short call reserve. So I believe it's like a 2-hour call out. And since you'd be kind of next to the phone ready to go, you don't have to be at the airport. And then there's ready reserve, which means you're like actually in your uniform and you're at the airport ready to go within 15 minutes. So those are kind of the different types of reserve. It's basically, it kind of focuses around like what your seniority can hold. What do you want to do with the schedule for that month? Let's say you had like a wedding that you wanted off on, you know, the 15th of the month. You could put that in that when you put your bid in every month, you could put that in and say, hey, I want this day off. You can also trade with other pilots. So let's say like me and I guess Alex, let's say you wanted the 15th off and I had the 15th off and I wanted to work the 15th. You can kind of trade that. So there's a lot of flexibility with the schedule, which I enjoyed a lot because you can go do different stuff. You can also pick up extra trips and stuff. Like I picked up a trip out of Minneapolis a couple weeks ago. And I often attach like higher levels of pay to those trips. So this trip was at, I think, 150%. So make some good money off that.
It's pretty decent. So with short, long, and ready to go, is it basically the more senior you get, the more likely you're able to get long ones? Or is it mainly like new guys doing like the ready 15-minute kind of scheduling?
Yeah, it's completely based off seniority. It's kind of weird sometimes because I should say it's weird. Just it's different because a lot of maybe more senior people that you know, want to be home more often, they might do that long call reserve. So sometimes it's not necessarily just because you're junior that you're going to always get reserved. Sometimes people actually purposely bid reserve. And I know at least at the mainline level, people that are, you know, fly some of the bigger aircraft, they do some of that reserve. That way they don't, you know, they have more time at home basically. So it kind of goes all over the place, but honestly, I was kind of surprised that I actually got that long call reserve for this whole month or past month, because it's typically kind of a more senior thing to do. So I guess kind of the point is crazy things happen and you don't always, not always follow the stereotypical, like, oh, you're super junior, so you're gonna get ready reserve the whole month. Basically, it doesn't always necessarily necessarily fall into place. And with so much movement going on right now in the industry, things are, I wouldn't say non-standard in terms of, what people are actually getting in terms of reserve and base and upgrade times. I mean, it's all over the place, basically, is kind of my point, just when there's so much movement in the industry right now.
So you're so with the upgrade times, what does yours look like at your current company for you to get to captain?
I believe it's about 2 years. I'll just say, I know our company typically has a little bit longer of an upgrade time. I know they're working on that and they have a couple measures in place that are going to kind of fix that. So we'll see. It depends on how quickly things move along in the industry. We're losing people every month to different carriers. Some people are going even over to like JetBlue and Spirit and some of the other, low-cost carriers as well. So I guess basically who knows, but that's kind of the timeline that I'm expecting.
So with you picking up extra trips and stuff, will that make you upgrade to captain faster or not, since it's all based on seniority? It seems like flight time doesn't really affect your seniority number.
Yeah, so it's kind of double-edged sword. You have to get the flight time regardless. You have to get 1,000 hours, but your seniority has to hold it. So you have to hit both of those things. So regardless, you want to get as much flight time as you can, or at least that's my perspective right now, either towards a captain upgrade or there's an opportunity to, go elsewhere. You want to get, you're trying to build your experience, kind of almost like CFIing, if that makes sense.
And that's all second command turbine time that you're trying to build that 1,000 hours of?
Yep. So you get that second command. I think you have to hit 2,500 hours. Don't quote me on that. And then you can upgrade, eligible to upgrade to the left seat.
Okay. And then you go to the left seat and you start building pilot command twin turbine. How long do you think you'll be doing that for to build those hours?
I mean, you can do it, from what I flew with a guy the other day that I think had maybe 200 or 300 hours in the left seat, and he was already going to JetBlue. So, I mean, it doesn't, I've been told right now too, there's a lot of people that are upgrading into the left seat, and pretty much the second they get done with their, they get done with basically the check ride for it and whatever else, a lot of these, some of these mainline carriers are calling them up and giving them a class date. So sometimes all it takes is that next training event, and you might be a thing or might have that opportunity to move on to a different carrier. So it really kind of depends on how long. But typically, at least under standard operating practice, I guess, is most of the time they're looking for additional 1,000 hours at PIC turbine. I know, for example, Southwest Airlines is still pretty focused on that. They use that as a qualification still. But as we continue on into the pilot shortage, or we continue to have the great movement in the industry that we have, that 1,000 hour requirement for some of these airlines, the PIC time might change. And again, you'd have to talk specifically to some of these hiring managers at these different companies to kind of get an idea of that. And they might not even reveal that, but that's kind of what I've seen recently. For that, I know a lot of people from at least my company are going to JetBlue and some of the other carriers like that, even before they even upgrade to captain. We've had a couple of FOs that have gone directly to United without even upgrading to captain. So,
really,
yeah, kind of my point is it anything goes, I guess, for that. But from a technical FA point, that's kind of what the hour requirements are, at least upgrade. In the left seat.
So you talked about pilot shortage. I know I've been hearing that ever since I've come to UND. Do you continue to see that actually happening? Because I feel like there's a lot of people in the program that I'm in. Do you see that there's going to be a continue of the pilot shortage?
Buckle up.
I'm not, I don't, it's going to kind of my disclaimer here is I'm not a, expert on pilot hiring. But really, I think the thing that's going to be is just how much demand are we going to have as we exit from, you know, COVID and, or, you know, hopefully exit from COVID here. I definitely see, I mean, I just walking through JFK last night, it's definitely, I would say, back. I mean, that terminal was packed. You know, the ghost town through most of the pandemic in 2020. So I think the travel demand is coming back. I don't know what that's going to look like in terms of the, are we going to see a more leisure market? That might be the case. Is the business travelers, are they going to be gone forever? Are they going to be gone for a couple of years? Who knows? So kind of my point on that is, you know, what is, I don't know what the need's going to be in 2, 5, you know, 10 years, but at least the need right now seems to be pretty high. There's a lot of movement. You know, from some of the mentors I work with, they've always kind of told me every about 10 years, the industry kind of takes a reset. And I'm hoping, you know, we just kind of had that reset and it wasn't a terrible reset. But yeah, I definitely see the effects, I think, a little bit of the pilot shortage. I know there, you know, there's a lot of the junior captains at my company are getting worked a lot because they don't have enough captains and they're, you know, desperately working to get people upgraded. I think the pilot shortage is evident at some of the schools. I know, you know, a lot of people, you know, have moved on to different career opportunities from, you know, UND and some of the other major 141 schools. So I think it's evident that they're moving up, but we'll just see on, you know, long-term, how long is that going to last? You know, you talk to some people, they'll say by the end of the decade, there's not going to be any pilot shortage because, you know, we're all going to be basically at the, you know, the carriers and, you know, it's not going to reset that, you know, 65 clock for a while, age, you know, mandatory requirement of the age requirement to retire. It's not going to reset for a while because we're all going to be kind of young and in the industry again. And it's going to look like the early 90s or, you know, right after Vietnam when all these guys came back from the war and were flying and there wasn't any pilot jobs. So that's kind of the what I've been told. And again, that's kind of my disclaimer is I'm not a, you know, expert on, you know, future airline growth, but that's kind of what I see right now and kind of for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
So what I'm hearing is that you got to make sure you're a captain at a legacy carrier by like 2030.
I mean, you could say that, but again, anything can go. I mean, we could have self-flying airplanes by 2030. I highly doubt that, but you get my point. There's so many disruptions in the industry and there's so many moving parts. I mean, who saw COVID coming? Nobody. I mean, I remember I was flying with you, Wyatt, back in February of 2020, and I was like, I expected us going to have a class date in August. Like, life was good. We were flying, like, no concern in the world. You know, the airlines were hitting record profits in February of 2020. I think Delta was like a $16 billion profit or whatever for the year in February of 2020. And then, you know, things turned around and, you know, completely changed. So I guess probably the biggest lesson I at least learned, and, you know, there's a lot of other people that had different situations. And you know, like I said, I was very fortunate to continue kind of building my resume during the time of COVID, but I just, kind of being resilient and ready, I guess, for anything that happens next. I think that was kind of a lesson for, or should be a lesson for everyone. And it feels like you guys are like a lot more in tune with that than we are. Kind of my age group, the people that were kind of on the bubble of leaving UND right when COVID hit, because it took us a little bit to kind of regroup and get going again. And I've been told that for years, like, oh, you got to, you know, basically have all your, you know, have other options moving. And that kind of proved it to me. So that was kind of the lesson I learned from that. And, you know, a lot of people learned that lesson. I think it was a positive thing from that aspect. And by no means am I saying that COVID-19 was a positive for anybody, but just my point was is the, you know, being resilient and ready and kind of learning that lesson of accepting that things are going to change a little bit and it just kind of play along.
So when you say you're not a real airline pilot until you get furloughed at least once, right? So we'll just count right. That as your furlough.
Right.
So you were talking about different options. Is that kind of the main reason you're rolling into your master degree right now and want to do side gigs?
Yeah, that's kind of exactly why. I started my master's program back in it was the fall of 2020. So I was still at UND. I took a little bit of a break back in April once I got my class date and my current airline. But yeah, that was kind of my reason for it. Plus it was something I kind of want to do anyway. And at the time, I had the downtime to do it, and I still have a little bit of the time just from the time I've been sitting on reserve. I'm here, and you're kind of chilling in the hotels. You can do it remotely. So, you know, and I know, you know, other people that have different, you know, businesses on the side. I flew with the guy about a week ago that, like, he mines Bitcoin on the side. Like, he has, like, three or four, like, little, like, I don't know any, like, I know about Bitcoin, but I, like, no clue about how, like, all that works. The dude's got, like, a whole setup in his garage and showing it to me, and he makes, like, $50 a day off of it. So, my point is, if anything's, like, possible on, like, the side gig, at least in the airline pilot world. I know people that run like Jiffy Lubes. I mean, anything under the sun, like people that like do stuff on the side of, you know, like second income. And I think that's overall right now, people are kind of looking at that, you know, inside aviation, outside of aviation, like, you know, having a second source of income. I mean, I know it's a really kind of trendy thing to do, but I think the airline pilots have always been kind of doing that.
So, do you find that aviation's a good career where you have enough downtime to start your own kind of business?
Yeah, I mean, I think the coolest part is that flexibility. You know, like I said, if I wanted to work like 15 days this month and that's it, I could totally do that. You know, I picked up a bunch of extra stuff. I kind of put all my long call reserve days together that way I could pick up extra stuff. So, if you really want to work, you want to make all the extra money, you can do that. If you want to, you know, go explore those other options, if you want to travel or do whatever, you can also take those days off as well. So that's the cool part about all of this. I think that's why people like to do all this extra stuff outside of aviation.
Okay. And you're talking about picking up extra flights. So I know that airliners get paid per hour, but let's say like you want to do the minimal. Is there like a set amount of hours you need to do per month or a max amount of hours? Those kind of things.
Yeah, so and my current company is a 75-hour month guarantee. So meaning regardless, you're going to get flat rated at 75 hours. The way I kind of think of it is like you're like a salesperson. They get paid a salary every year, and then they get paid commission. But 75 hours is basically your base salary. So anything you do past that's added on time. So let's say you sit on reserve a whole month, but you don't get called once. And that was happening to people during COVID. They're still getting that 75-hour guarantee.
So you're getting paid for that 75-hour block then of flight time.
Right. Correct. No matter what happens.
And are you going over that 75 hours right now per month?
Yeah. So anytime you pick something up outside of that 75 or your normal like work days, so like 4-day trip I picked up the other day, that was added on to the 75 hours regardless. So even if I don't hit 75 hours of flying on the reserve, I still get that time tacked on.
Oh,
so I think I'm going to credit probably like 112 hours or 115 hours this month, which is good.
That is really good. So I kind of was curious on the bidding process. I don't know how that really works. How does it work in a airline?
Yeah. So each airline's probably a little bit different. Each day, each month, or the day in each month that we go back and we basically put in our bid preferences. And I'm not very picky, like on a lot of months, like it's a couple days, like, hey, if I could get the six off for this wedding, perfect. You can put those types of stuff in there. Some people are really like specific on their bids. They want to have Burlington, Vermont overnights, and they only want to fly on the weekend. If you're senior enough to hold that, you put that in there. And then if the computer says that you're senior enough, it'll give that to you. But think of it as kind of like every trip of, you know, that's out there, every flight basically goes into a big pool and everybody puts these requests in and it kind of, it goes down the seniority list. The computer auto basically assigns it from that.
And then let's say like there's like flights that no one picked and they need someone to fly that, then they're just like, hey, you need to fly this flight.
That's typically will go into an open time pot. Think of that as kind of like coverage at UND. That makes sense. You have that option, and that's basically like that trip that I did 3 or 4 days ago. or probably like a week ago now, but it was in that open time pot. So nobody had picked that trip up or had gotten assigned for whatever reason. And then they'll turn around and attach premium pay to it. So it's like 150% trip.
Oh, that's super.
Or if no one actually picks it up in the open time pot, then they'll put one of those reserve pilots on it. So they might put like a long call reserve FO on it or a short call reserve FO on it.
So with those long and short call reserves, are you basically just making sure like if a pilot got sick, then you would come in and fly for that?
Yep. So if, you know, Joe Bob calls him sick, you know, it could be even halfway through his trip or whatever else, they'll put you on that trip to, you know, continue flying it. And sometimes let's say they have for whatever reason, a whole crew gets out of sequence, and they'll actually pull, like I flew one leg from Atlanta to Harrisburg, and we're all reservists. Every single person on that flight, the flight attendants and the captain and I, were both all reservists. So basically I call it like duct taping that whole crew together from reserve, because they don't, for whatever reason, that whole crew got, you know, stuck somewhere else because of weather or maintenance or whatever else. So it does happen. Like they could basically, our job is just fill in. I mean, it's like a covered CFI at UND, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Tyler, let's say like, do you see like a lot more all crews going out because of COVID? Like if someone's like a close contact, then the whole crew has to like quarantine, and then you have to get a whole reserve in.
I haven't seen that, or at least heard of it happening. I know thankfully a lot of the people on my airline are vaccinated, but I did kind of hear that happening during like the height of COVID at a couple different airlines. I was told one story that they like basically the flight attendant, like they had boarded the aircraft and they realized that the flight attendant, they like turned around and like tested positive. So they like pulled the whole crew like off the aircraft and were like trying to figure out what to do and delayed the flight like 3 or 4 hours. But that was like middle of COVID in 2020. So I haven't seen any of that like extreme stuff going on. I'm assuming, you know, many people we interact with and ground crew members and whatever else that, you know, yeah, those people have COVID, but we have the masks. I'm fully vaccinated, so I'm not too concerned, but I know that did happen kind of in the early days of COVID.
I'm just wondering, do you have you ever had an unruly passenger on your plane that you can talk about?
Yeah, let me think about this for a second. I haven't had anything too unruly. There's definitely people not following instructions. We did have one passenger that decided to vape on the jet bridge. So we had to mitigate that, take care of that. But yeah, I don't want to, you know, go too deep into you know, that part of our world. But yeah, it does happen. I haven't had anything too over the top. But it's definitely a concern right now, I think, in the aviation, or at least the airline industry right now. I'm sure, you know, you open up the newspaper every week. I think last week there was an ordeal with a JetBlue flight where somebody like tried to storm the cockpit while the pilot was walking out to use the restroom. And that type of
what
stuff.
What are they thinking? Like,
yeah, I would have to. I haven't read the full affidavit on that, but I would encourage people to take a look at that. But yeah, it's crazy, and it definitely just kind of makes you wonder what's going on in the world when you see stuff like that. But it's also a concern for me, at least as a crew member. Like, you know, I don't get to really see what's going on in the back a lot. You know, the door's shut basically from, you know, pushback to pulling in the gate. You know, so what is our flight attendants kind of getting exposed to and all that? I mean, I'm generally concerned sometimes for a flight attendant and just what they're exposed to every day on, you know, it's their working conditions. So I'm hoping things improve and people start being nice to our flight attendants. And this isn't just a specific thing to my airline. I mean, I know everybody's, you know, news is reporting it, but of all my people I know, like, you know, across the major airlines, regional airlines and stuff, it's been a trend. It definitely seemed like they've been having to kick people off and have passenger interaction issues.
Are they giving you guys any, you know, additional training? Like, because the It's gone up like 300%, right?
Like I heard you guys get trained out of SIPPI people. Is that true?
I don't know. I believe that might be on the flight attendant side.
Okay.
We do get a little bit like self-defense. Like, we get to go punch the dummy in the training center. It's kind of fun. But we do have some very specific, safety and security protocols. And we know what we're going to do at certain levels. That's all I'm going to say on that. There is a tiered approach to how we deal with things. So, I'm never concerned. I'll say that.
Good that you feel safe up there.
Yeah.
No one's storming the cockpit, hopefully soon.
No. Like I said, really, I think the major concern right now is focus should be on our flight attendants. I mean, as the pilots, we kind of shut the door, and unfortunately, we don't have a lot of interaction with them in flight, other than our phone. So, if anything, if anybody hears this or whatever else, it's kind of my thing. Is like, I wish, kind of treat your flight attendants nicely is my point.
And some of the videos that have came out recently, it's just been wild. It's crazy what people are doing.
Yeah. I don't understand it. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of reasons why I think it's happening, but I don't have any of the, specific statistics of why it's happening. I just think people are, over the mask stuff, which is fine. I get that. I don't like wearing masks anymore than the next person, but I know I have to do it to keep everybody safe. And even though I'm fully vaxxed, so, and it is a level of respect towards the flight crew, I think, too, that people are, bringing in. I mean, it's kind of like, I wouldn't go into somebody's house and act like that, but like some of these people are basically in our house, I guess, is the way I look at it. And people aren't really being respectful from that aspect. But that's my own personal opinion. So,
yeah, well, especially being in like a metal tube at 30,000 feet isn't probably the best place to take a political stand.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of my, it seems like people are making that part of it. It's like, this is their like battle cry, and it's just not the time for that,
Mm-hmm. Especially judging by the aviation history of our country. So,
yeah.
Plus, like, do people not realize that when they get off the plane, they're going to be met with like 50 cops and they're going to be arrested and probably put on a no-fly list? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, like, you got to find something better to like worry about, in my opinion. But
so, are you finding a lot of people that are kind of still mad about the mask thing, or are people mainly over it now? Because I know people are getting put on like no-fly lists because they refuse to wear masks.
I think it's very regional. It depends on where we're flying, and a lot of just different, I'm trying not to turn this into a political discussion by any stretch, but I'm just saying, like, it seems like, depending on what city we're going to or whatever else, each city, each culture is a little bit different, even in the United States. So I think it's, people have different, outlooks. They've experienced COVID differently than, you or me or anybody else. So I think it's very inconsistent in terms of, where people are from and what they've experienced. Because you might fly with somebody that, they lost their whole family from COVID or whatever else. And obviously they're, assume are pretty, focused on putting the mask on and appreciate other people putting the mask on. Then you might fly with somebody that, hasn't experienced any, death or, anything, firsthand experience with COVID. And, they still might, not be heeding that, the mask mandate, or, be taking it to heart, basically. So that's kind of what, at least my experience or what I've seen.
So get a little more off of the whole mask thing.
We gotta change the topic before we all get fired. Right?
So what made you choose like the current company that you're at?
Yeah. So I think it's really important. Like, culture is very important for anything that you do with any company that you're going to go spend time at. The other thing too to focus on is what is, you know, what do you want to get out of that company? You know, every company pretty much flies, you know, jets, whether it's the 175 or the CRJ or whatever else. They're all the same. They all log the time. You know, everybody, I think, is obsessed with the 175. It's a great airplane. A lot of my friends fly the 175. I'm not hating on the airplane. But my point is kind of, what are you going to be able to get out of that company and that culture? Do you, are you going to get along with a lot of your captains? Are you going to go along with your crews? Because that's been kind of the biggest eye-opening experience. Even at the regional level, each company is a little bit different on their culture. I feel like the culture that I'm at with my company, I fit in really well with that. I'm not saying that I would not fit in with the other companies, but that was something that I've always kind of appreciated, a very professional atmosphere, but also we have a lot of fun with that. You know, and something that I really appreciate is my company has a pilots union as well. So that basically we have a lot of protection that's built in our day-to-day operation. That's provided by our contract. You know, little things like they can't, every time that I go in for recurrent, the first takeoff that I do has to be a normal takeoff. That is something that the union negotiated. That way you're not like your first takeoff's not a V1 cut and, you know, blowing snow when you haven't done that in a year. So that's kind of something that I didn't really understand until I got into a current company I'm at, and, you know, the little protections that are offered with that. Also too, I mean, pay is important. That being said too, I wouldn't chase pay. I think we, you know, everybody kind of has that mentality of like, oh yeah, go make that bread. But, you know, I'd be very cautious in general of different sign-on bonus deals and whatever else. And that was pre-COVID, that was post-COVID. Just kind of look at the fine details on everything that's going on. That being said too, don't be afraid to jump into stuff too. You know, honestly, I tell people this and they kind of laugh, but the only, one of the major reasons I met my current company is they called me first back from COVID. You know, I'd interviewed with them previously before COVID. I interviewed with two other airlines before that. And basically they were able to offer me the class date the earliest, got me moving on my, with my career plan the quickest. So that's honestly why I took that offer and kind of ran with it initially. But the reason why I interviewed with that company in the beginning was because of all those items. I felt like it was a good fit. You know, bases are kind of important too, but I personally would not get caught up too much in that. That's just, again, my opinion on this. You know, I, right now I'm commute from DFW to Cincinnati. I'm about to move to New York. So I'm going to live in base in New York. So, you know, if you can move to base, that's awesome. But I, to me, all the bases and all that stuff are kind of, you know, fluid and, you know, bases close and open. COVID, we saw bases close for other airlines that open. I know there's a couple of airlines that had like Houston bases and they closed those. So all that stuff kind of changes. So I wouldn't focus on that. I mean, I would focus on, you know, important stuff of, hey, can I get along with most of the captains and sit in the left seat or right seat of this airplane for 4 days? Am I going to be able to, you know, am I going to make the money that A, they're advertising, and is it, you know, consistently going to be making that money? Is it going to be around for 5-10 years of the regional if that, you know, choose to stay there that long, or, you know, whatever your options are with that. But, you know, that's the type of stuff. And, you know, what are the protections that are provided to the pilot group? You know, are they unionized, non-unionized? It's all stuff to look at. Upgrade time is important as well. What is the reputation of that regional to, you know, if you're trying to go to a mainline carrier, or even one of the low-cost carriers like Southwest and JetBlue, you know, is your regional airline, they have a good, you know, they renowned of having a good training program to where, you know, they're going to desire to have those, you know, people that went through that company. So I don't know. That's at least what it seems like it's important right now. You know, things change, but go ahead.
Yeah, you brought up like three really good things, but for unions. So like, obviously like we've interviewed SkyWest pilots before this.
Yeah.
And they're not unionized. Was that like a big consideration for you, or have you seen in your within your days in the industry, that that's like a big deal? Because it seemed like they seemed to, like the SkyWest pilots really didn't have a problem with that. I guess they liked their company, so I assume they don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, so first off, I think SkyWest is a great company. I'm not, that was one of the job offers that I held before COVID as well, or planning on, you know, doing the final interview with. You know, I think it's just a personal preference. I think we're all very, most of the regional airlines are very safe operation. So there's not typically a concern. It was just once I got into the company that I'm currently at, I think that's kind of when I saw a little bit more of the smaller details that I kind of came to appreciate. And it's just kind of the protection, I think, in at least in our, you know, the airline pilot job as a whole, there needs to be some protection from the safety and the business side of it. There's some really extreme examples of when that the business and the safety side kind of mixed and, you know, it resulted in not a very positive outcome. So at least that's my opinion. I think, like I said, I didn't really realize any of this until I got into the company I'm in right now. So
isn't that like kind of a, that's like kind of one of the big benefits of a union is like, if you don't think that the flight is going to be safe, but your company wants you to go, obviously because they're making money off this flight and they're not going to make any money if you don't go, you have the union to back you up in your, because you are the PIC and making that call.
Yep. But that being said, regardless of no union, union, whatever else, you always still have that right as PIC. And I've seen that once already. I've seen a captain actually refused an aircraft. I'm not going to go into too much detail on that story, but that did happen. And you know, we had all the protection in the world. Even our chief pilot was supporting us because of behind that. So it does happen.
And then let's go back onto some of like research that you had to do to look at what airline fits you the best. What are like some different things that you can do to figure out if that airline's a fit for you?
Talk to people that are currently at that airline that are experiencing the day-to-day life and kind of operation of it. Again, nothing to, I don't want to speak ill or talk poorly against like any recruiting department, but it is a recruiting department. You're going to hear the highlight. It's a highlight reel. So go out there, talk to people that are actually flying for the airline, and stuff that's a big deal to somebody might not be that big of a deal to you. We all have different perspectives. We all have different, you know, goals that we want to get out of, you know, what we're working for. You know, if somebody, I just take, you know, so a lot of the people I experienced at UND, they wanted to stay in the Twin Cities area. So going to my current company and commuting to New York or Atlanta or any of our other bases that we have, that might not be desirable to them. That's something I didn't really care. I lived from Dallas. I was prepared to move to base. So people kind of focus on that and they might try to sell it to you as like, oh, well, if you, you know, well, you really got to commute a lot at this company. Well, I mean, that's something I don't really mind. That's something that's not a big deal for me. But if somebody wants to stay and, you know, live in the Twin Cities or they have a farm wherever and they want to be able to be based in Minneapolis, they might focus on that one company just because of that. And that's perfectly fine. I guess my point is don't, one size doesn't fit all on what you're looking for, but talk to people that are actually at the company. Try to find people that are have like a similar kind of career focus or, you know, what they want out of the world basically. And you can kind of see what, you know, the pros and cons are of it. And talk to a couple people because some people are really, you know, sometimes negative, you know, everything's a big deal to people. I mean, we all deal with people every day on with different attitudes and stuff. So that's kind of my point. But questions that kind of I would ask the recruiters and stuff too is, you know, ask those basic, what is the upgrade time? You know, is you have a breakdown of the pay, and all the carriers are really good about kind of breaking that down with their promotional material and stuff. But get to know those recruiters as well. That way, when you become or it comes time to interview with them and stuff, that you're ready to go in terms of, you know, you already know these people. The guy that did my interview, the HR person that did my interview for my current company, I had met my freshman year at UND and kept up with him the whole time. So I kind of use that as a good example of keeping that network open with all the regional carriers. And things change with regional carriers. you know, to be honest, like I said, my carrier that I'm currently at was not my first choice pre-COVID. It quickly became my first choice post-COVID, and I was thankful that I took the opportunity to interview with them, and they gave me the time to do it. So.
So you said things change. Okay. So you said you're going to be moving to your new base in New York. So are you going to be living in a crash pad for that, or how does that work?
So I'm looking at an apartment next week. We'll see how that goes. I do have a crash pad set up for the month of October regardless, but hopefully have the opportunity to maybe go towards that apartment, which would be awesome.
What do those crash pads look like? Like, how are they operated?
So there's a couple different ways you can do it. The crash pad I'm part of is part of the hotel crash pad network. So it's basically like a hotel room with like a couple beds in it. And it's what was desirable about that to me was it's a hotel. So there's a shuttle. There's all the stuff is changed out daily. You can go like some of the other bases, like places like Detroit or Denver or wherever, they have a lot more space. So they might have like actual house that's rented out and you rent a room. But you have to like take care of like changing out the sheets and all that stuff, kind of upkeep of that crash pad. So there's a couple different ways you can do it. Typically you kind of find your crash pad like information. There'd be like an information board at each base, and there's several Facebook group pages, and there's all sorts of ways to kind of get that information. But I don't know. I'm not a big, like, I don't know. I like to have my own little space. So that's why I'm like trying to probably get away from the crash pad part. Some people enjoy it. Some people don't. I'm trying to avoid having to do it overall if I can. So we'll see. Again, personal preference on that. There's not a right way. There's not a wrong way. Basically whatever gets the job done. Obviously the cheapest, it's not going to get you bed bugs or anything like that. It's the desirable part, of that. So
that would be an issue.
Yeah. So you have to pay like rent. Is it like rent per month kind of thing on the crash pad?
Yeah. Like I pay like $275 or like close to probably $300 for the crash pad I have. And that's kind of high, but that's just because it's part of the hotel part of it. So I'm spending a little extra money, but I'm also getting a little bit nicer. Everything's changed out daily and everything else, versus that you can go down typically around like the $200 mark. You're going to have your own little space, but you have to change out everything on your own. And it's a lot more upkeep, I guess. Some of them have cars too. I haven't really seen that in New York, but I know some of the other cities that are less populated and a little bit cheaper, they actually have cars that are associated with the crash pads they share. So
we talked about pay just briefly. And you said not to get hung up on pay, but I just saw like a promotion for, I think it was PSA or maybe Envoy, that they were hiring experienced first officers with $182,000 in bonuses. And I know like there's the contracts that you got to sign for those can be kind of scary sometimes, but freshmen might not. So yeah. How would something like that work?
Yeah. That was a big shocker, I guess, to the whole regional industry. I mean, we're talking about it. My current company, but I don't know. I mean, the overall thing is I'm not going to not say go look at that and go do it. I mean, look at every option. There's a lot of, like I said, whatever personally you want to get out of it, just look at the fine print on everything. Ask the questions of it, push it. And sometimes there's not always going to be good answers on stuff that's so new like that. And that's okay. But if you feel confident in it, go do it. The huge deal of, you have the flow to American and, that's what you want to do in the world, go do it. I'm not ever saying if there's money attached to what you want to go do it basically. And look at, just look at what the requirements are for it. Don't be afraid to be try something new, basically. It's kind of my point on that side of it. But yeah, just look at the fine print, make sure it matches what your goals are and your interests are. And, you know, there's a give and take on all that stuff and trying to figure out, you know, how much, what am I going to give up? What am I going to gain from it? That type of stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's huge. I mean, $180,000 in bonuses and stuff to career, like, you know, basically over your career at a regional is massive. So yeah, I would never say don't go take a look at that. You know, but look at how it's paid out. Look at how much tax money you're going to lose. I mean, you're going to lose, like, personally, on my sign-on bonus, I lost about 5% or 10% off my sign-on bonus just in taxes on how it was paid out. I mean, it's not a, that's kind of, I knew that was coming, but you kind of get on, you get what I'm saying on, you know, talk to those people that actually work for the company, look at how it's affecting them, look at how they're receiving those bonuses and that type of stuff. So
another thing on pay, like we talked about base pay of 75 hours, like realistically, and you don't have to do specific numbers for your airline, right, but like, what does it look like? Maybe like your next 5 years, like your first year obviously is going to be pretty like low. Like when you upgrade to captain, like a second year captain, like on average, how much is a second year captain at a regional making right now?
This is ballpark. I would have to look it up. I'm guess probably from about the 85 to 95, at least at my company.
It so might that be a little base, bit, or would that be like picking up?
That'd
stuff?
Be the base.
Okay, so you could pretty easily make over $100,000 as a second year captain if you stay there that long.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I would imagine we have FOs that are making over $100,000 with the extra, you know, stuff that are probably second or third, fourth year FOs. Again, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I know what the pay increase is per year up to from FO to captain. Again, a ballpark number. I would look airline pilot forums, if you're ever curious, typically get you pretty close on what the pay scales are for each individual airline. They'll give you an hourly rate and you can look at the minimum guarantee. A lot of people, there's an old saying that you can add the hourly rate and then just add zeros to it. So if you make $50 an hour, it's $50,000 a year. I don't really like that math too much because it doesn't account for per diem. There's a lot of other ways you make money too in the airlines. I didn't really realize that until I got into it, but per diem actually adds up. So every time that you're away from your base, you get paid like $1.50 an hour. And there's sometimes you can make like couple, you know, $200-$300 extra a month just off that per diem. So,
I think like what I was kind of looking to get across is that it seemed like in the early 2000s, you know, the regional carriers were pretty rough. Like it was a tough way to live. Like they were making way below 30,000, like 15,000 a year, just trying to get to the legacies. But that's pretty much changed, right? I hope.
Yeah,
I'm not there.
Yeah, I don't see, you know, any of the regional airlines having that. Like, you're going to be able, at least from what I, you know, my perspective of, you know, I'm 23 and don't really have that much responsibility. I can live pretty comfortably on the money that I make right now. So, you know, if you have other factors in your life, you know, spouse or kids or whatever else, yeah, it might be a little tighter on that budget, but it all depends on where you live. Again, like I said, that's probably the biggest thing, kind of realization I had when I came into the airlines. It's such a different experience and different goals for each person, and that's okay. I mean, I at least felt like during my college days and whatever else, I had a great friend group and we were all kind of focused on that same thing, and it was the same, almost, I don't want to say cookie cutter, but, you know, the same focus of you go to the regionals, you know, you spend some time there and then hopefully you can go to a mainline carrier. You know, that's the focus. And that's still my personal focus, but, you know, you're going to have other life events basically as you move on in your time and whatever else. And that's going to weigh into how important things are.
Cool.
And that's okay.
I'm glad I'm not going to be living in poverty for the next 5 years of my life.
Yeah, you're still going to be probably eating some ramen, and I definitely pack my lunch someday just because I'm cheap, but it's it's not solely Las Vegas, but I definitely appreciate it. And I'm never really worried about too much on the money side of stuff.
Yeah, I heard back in like,
that's just me.
I heard back in like early 2000s, there were sometimes where FOs couldn't even get their own food at the airport because they didn't have enough money, which is pretty wild. But yeah, that I kind of wanted to touch up back on, you talked a little bit about the interviewing process with the current airline you're at. Like, how do you like prepare for something like that? Cause you really, I know it's like a lot scenario based, and I don't, how do you like prepare for like a scenario based interview?
Well, kind of like my biggest advice is practice through so many scenarios. And you're thinking, well, how do you do that? There's typically a lot of, you know, there's going to always be the oddball scenario you've never seen before that they hand you. But take a look at the gouges online. A lot of these, I think it's airline pilot careers or some of these forums are going to have gouges or information on, you know, what the interview process is like. I wouldn't solely reference that. Talk to people who have gone through the interview there. Practice, you know, the interview, even if it's with somebody like, you know, Alex and Wyatt, if you guys just create a list of questions that you think you might get, or, you know, you have from that gouge, just practice back and forth. But write down any of the experiences that you guys have as CFIs and save those. You know, if you had a moment where, you know, like a very common question is explain or give a time that you had a conflict with a superior. You know, I think I used a time when the SOF disagreed on something, and I don't even remember the story I used for that, but I had that written down and was able to reference it. And it was kind of a quick way to kind of answer that question. But keep the scenario-based questions short and sweet, but cover the topic. I know, like, at least at Mainline Delta, they use, like, to use it, the STAR acronym, which is, like, situation, time, action, result. Overall, I like that because it breaks it down into a very short, you know, way to explain the situation. I'm sure you can find other little acronyms to kind of remember that. But write those experiences down. I mean, I've already written a couple down at my current, just from my experience, even at the airlines that I'm going to use. So, you know, some of the other common questions are like, you know, what do you do if you feel like your captain's been drinking? Those type of questions are pretty, I wouldn't say industry standard, but and there might be slight deviations from that. Some of the airlines too, people like to do actual like in-flight scenarios of, you know, decision-making of where would you divert here or whatever else. So just being familiar with, you know, airline operations in general, like, I feel like it, at least from the UND perspective, like, we're pretty good at that information. We know we preach that a lot in the commercial course. So, you know, if you're diverting a aircraft, you know, I'm not going to bring the CRJ and the Kirkston. You know, just being able to apply logic. I'm saying that very like sarcastically of like, you know, don't fly the CRJ and the Kirkston, but I think critical thinking skills of, you know, from aviation side, I think you guys have a good base layer coming from UND and just being able to apply that. Always think about the question too. You don't have to jump in and answer the question immediately. You know, take a pause. I always kind of say like, you know, take the 5-10 second awkward pause if you have to. Formulate that response in your mind because you're going to be a lot more successful at answering that question. I'm a very like go. I just get it all out person. So that helped me a lot through that interview process.
So did you kind of look at it as like a check ride kind of thing, like preparation or anything like that?
Yeah, but I never saw it as a check ride. Yeah, you know, prepped for it. I got all my documents lined out, made sure my logbook was all put together. But the way I looked at it was, you're going to come down there and you're going to talk with these people, and you know, you're going to see if you're a good fit for their airline. And again, that sounds a very like kind of sappy answer, but that's kind of the way I looked at it. It's very conversational. Ask questions at the end, ask good questions, you know, have that discussion with them, keep up with the people that you interview with, if, you know, hopefully if it does go well. You know, like I said, the HR person I met freshman year of UND did my interview. So we already had that, you know, base of, you know, we knew each other. again, he was just basically a contact, but, you know, I didn't really know a whole lot, but, you know, still had that, you know, relationship going into that. And it made me a lot more relaxed. Now, of course, that's the exception of the rule. You're not always going to know everybody you interview with, and that's okay. But don't look at it as a check ride. You're going to probably make at least one or two mistakes in that interview, and that's okay. Those are not, you know, over the top, you know, it's fine. So I don't know. I hate saying don't get stressed out, but the calmer you are, the better it's going to go as well. And I don't have a good answer on how not to freak out about that, but, you know, spending time studying, you know, I don't know. Each airline's a little bit different in the format of how they do things. At my current airline, they typically did some HR stuff, and then they rolled into some technical questions. Some airlines, they'll do a separate technical interview. They'll do a HR interview. Most of the time, the overall kind of theme that I've seen through, at least on the regional level, is the technical stuff. They're just making sure it's going to be heavily focused on the IFR stuff. Maybe some of the high altitude aerodynamic stuff, but I think a lot of people stress out that they have to know everything about, you know, flying a transport category aircraft at 35,000 feet. That's not the case. They know that. That's the whole point of the regionals. They know that they're transitioning people from, you know, a smaller GA aircraft into a transport category jet. They do this every day. They get that part of it. You know, would I know what, you know, a critical Mach is, and, you know, why when the wings are swept? Those are good questions to know and the response to, but it's not like they're going to sit there and ask you about, you know, super, you know, specific 121 requirements and, you know, that type of stuff. They're not expecting that, but they might ask a question like, hey, what's the indication of a hung start? Or, and then the HR kind of portion, it seems like, hey, are you, you know, could I basically tip, like, at least in my experience, it's been a captain that's in the room with that, as well as the HR person. So obviously they're looking for the continuity side from the HR standpoint of, you know, are you a good fit for the company? But they're also looking from the captain side of, hey, can I sit on a 4-day trip with this guy? And that's kind of what it boils down to. So
yeah, do the best you really can. Interesting. Oh, you can keep going if you want.
No, you're good. I'm done.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that people will train their, you know, go to UND, train for 4 years, get all the certs and stuff. Obviously we study for orals and check rides. And then they finally get those hours, get an interview at an airline, which is like what you've been working your whole life for. Don't study, and then just totally blow the interview. So
yeah,
don't do that.
Well, yeah,
advice to myself, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need to study, but don't be a robot. They're not hiring a robot. They hired a robot. They already hired a robot. It's called the autopilot. They're hiring somebody to think critically, interact with people and passengers and everything else. I don't know. That's my soapbox and my disclaimer of full Tyler Berry opinion on that one. But I feel like, I don't know, right now at least, I don't know if it's been our increase in our online presence with COVID or whatever else, but it's like, we feel like that we have, like, specifically have a right answer to everything, and that's okay that we don't. Just, are you personable? Are you not going to throw your captain under the bus? Are you, you know, not going to be a HR issue? And as long as you kind of meet all those requirements, you can think critically, I think you're going to be just fine.
Okay, so kind of more of a general question coming to the end of the podcast, but what general advice would you have for just a general aviation student going through training right now?
Stay focused on completing the program and getting your ratings, and I wouldn't say move along, but I see a lot of issues, especially with private pilot students and kind of the people I've interacted with on the student level that were involved in other student organizations, or they were involved with their fraternity and whatever else. And I'm all for that. But they kind of let that get involved on top of completing their flight program. And you guys are both instructors or instructors in training or whatever, and you guys realize the consistency of having to get, you know, being consistent with the training that you're doing, or else it's not going to go well. You know, you can't go a week without flying. So that's kind of my biggest advice, is get in there, get the job done. You know, making sure that we have, I kind of call it the three tiers of, you know, success in aviation. Do we have the passion? Do we have the money? And do we have the time? As long as you have all three of those, you should be good to go. So, you know, making sure that you have the money lined up ahead of the time. I can't tell you how many times I've rolled up and there are certain students that were, you know, most of the time they just hadn't put the money in their AIMS account. And sometimes, you know, money was a struggle, and I completely get that. Making sure you have as much lined up as possible too is a, you know, successful part of completing your flight training. But that's my biggest thing, is just stay focused, get it done. Don't get distracted, because it's a pretty amazing thing that you have at the end of your time at UND, whatever you do, whether it be corporate, regional flying, stay at UND as an instructor, whatever else. It's a lot more fun to get paid to fly than paying somebody else to teach you how to fly.
Yeah, that's very true. But hey, Tyler, I really loved all the information you gave us today. I definitely learned quite a bit from just day-to-day operations in a regional. Thank you for being on today.
Yeah, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you for your time.
That was awesome.
Yeah, hopefully,
keep talking over each other.
Yeah, hopefully, didn't over talk too much on stuff. But
no,
thank you guys so much for having me, and I appreciate it. One side note too, Wyatt was actually my student back a couple years ago, so that's how we know each other. And then Alex, just met you, but it's cool to meet all of you guys, and good to see you again, Wyatt.
I want to do a shout out to Mr. Barry, great guy. Mr. Barry's a great guy, and thanks for dinner. That was great.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you enjoyed the podcast.
If you have any questions for us, DM us on Instagram @vertical_guidance.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.